There are many ways to train a dog, of course, but I figure it this way. If Guide Dogs for the Blind uses a particular method, there must be something to it. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to another episode of Good Dog, where my guest today is Michelle Pouliot. She's the Director of Research and Development for all dog, student, and puppy training programs for Guide Dogs for the Blind. Welcome, Michelle.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sure. Now, just let me understand one thing. The headquarters of Guide Dogs for the Blind is in San Rafael, California, but you're based in Oregon. Is there a separate campus up there?
Yes, we have an additional training campus up here near Portland, Oregon, where we train both our blind students the same as we train in San Rafael and train dogs. But the main campus, which also has the puppy program and a much larger version of our staff, is based out of San Rafael, and that's where it started back in the 1940s.
So interestingly enough, your title is the Director of Research and Development. What does that actually mean? I'm assuming you're not doing any sort of experiments on dogs.
No. What that really is in 2001, this was a new position that was initiated to see how we could best focus on improving any training techniques for dogs in training, and this includes client training, how are we educating our client, our student, and how are we bringing up our puppies as they're developed, knowing that there were a lot of changes going on in the world with techniques for training. We wanted to devote specific time towards improving our program, whereas we never really had the time to focus on that. All our time and energy was put on getting our guide dogs trained and getting our clients trained with those dogs. So this gave us the opportunity to actually spend time on how can we improve our training techniques, which historically hadn't changed that much since the 1940s.
What were some of the new advances that have happened recently?
Well, food use in dog training has, of course, escalated tremendously in the past decade, in the pet population mostly. And the interesting thing is that in the guide dog industry internationally, the use of food for training guide dogs was really steered clear of. The reasoning being, for many, many decades, was that because a guide dog has to work in and around food in the environment all day long, meaning restaurants, places of work where there's food, out on the sidewalk where the public or kids would drop food, the worry was if you used food in training a guide dog, you're going to make them scavengers when they're out and about and have food available.
Does that explain why Lulu is that way?
It could.
God, I never thought of it like that. You know, I learn something every day doing these good dog interviews.
Mm-hmm, yes. So, I mean, what was true was that we were, back in the early 1990s, when we were seeing that the pet population was using a lot of food for training, we were seeing those problems in those pets. So we would notice that somebody that was training their pet with food had a dog that was kind of begging all the time, or if they saw food on the sidewalk, they would lunge for it. And we knew that wouldn't be acceptable because a blind handler has a real problem, and they can't anticipate that. So if a blind person is walking down the sidewalk with their guide dog, and there's a hamburger that just dropped on the sidewalk, they don't have the advantage of going, uh-oh, hamburger ahead, I have to get prepared so I can prevent my dog from getting that. A blind handler can't do that.
So do trained guide dogs actually ignore hamburgers if they see them on the street?
Ideally, yes. You know,
impressive.
Obviously dogs aren't perfect, but yes, we needed to develop a way to use food reward that did not promote permissiveness around other food in the environment, whether it's somebody offering the dog food or in the restaurant, somebody drops food on the floor while the guide dog's there. We didn't want them to be getting so self-rewarded from food in the environment that it would cause them to be distracted from their job, which, of course, would be a safety issue for the blind person.
Not to mention the fact that labs have a propensity for putting on a few extra pounds, right?
Yeah, they love their food,
that
you know,
they do.
Right, and because of that was one of the reasons that people in this industry internationally avoided using food, because they already had a built-in genetic component to be scavengers because they loved their food. So everyone was very concerned about if we actually reward them with food, we would make that worse, right? So because of that, it was taboo in this industry for a long time. And so when we begin tackling just the whole subject of, let's see if there's a way we can use food reward to heighten our guide dog's desire and willingness to work without getting the side effects of a dog that's out there like a vacuum cleaner looking for stuff on the ground. And thank goodness we did figure out a way to do that.
And is this when you discovered clicker training?
Actually, it was pre-clicker training, and I'm kind of glad it happened in this order. Clicker training was really new at the time that we were considering trying to figure out a way to use food. And we first kind of tackled the whole issue of how do we use food effectively without causing these behavioral side effects for the blind handler when they're out and about in the world. So the first thing that we did is we kind of invented a food reward protocol to use that when we taught our young guide dogs in training how to accept food, they also at the same time, of course, they're excited about, yay, I'm getting food reward, but they also learned, guess what, there's rules that come with this food reward, and here are the rules, and I'm just going to say them really simply instead of the detail of our food reward training. But the basic rule is you can only accept food reward from your handler. And that handler is going to always hand that food directly to your mouth. So the rules are you cannot take food off the floor, even if the handler, who's food rewarding you, just dropped it. The handler will give you another reward if you accidentally drop it or they drop it. But you can't take food from either the floor or the environment. That would mean if there was food sitting on a chair or a counter. You can't take food from other people coming up and offering it to you.
That seems to make sense and be a program that would work. And yet, you then came up with something that was even more effective. What was wrong with that system, or where were their weaknesses in it?
There was actually nothing wrong with that system. As soon as we initiated the use of food reward effectively and we saw that we weren't getting side effects, all we were seeing was fantastic improvement, meaning we had a more powerful tool to tell the dog, great job, other than just praise and love alone. So we noticed, wow, this food is really helping us. It's helping our blind client. We taught our blind client how to use food, how to continue those rules of food reward so that they could reward their guide dog more powerfully than just praise alone. So then we said to ourselves, man, this food is really a great tool. How can we use it more powerfully? And some of us on the staff had been using clicker training with our pet dogs, and we were noticing the power of using clicker training. And we said to ourselves, okay, is there a way we can bring clicker training into guide dog work to make this powerful food tool even more powerful?
So what is clicker training? Let's start out by defining it.
Okay. Clicker training is a coined name that really is a method of operant conditioning using an audible marker. An audible marker, and the clicker just happens to be this tool that is the audible marker. It could be a whistle. It could be a word. It could be any sound that is very brief, very distinct, and very consistent. And what that sound is it is a marker signal for the dog that tells them, that's the moment you are, that's what I'm trying to tell you did right. So in less than a second, this audible signal is able to tell the animal, great job, you did it, and because you did that, here comes some really great reward. And because that reward came a few seconds after that sound, it doesn't matter. It hasn't confused the animal as to why they're being rewarded. The reason it means that is because you have conditioned the dog to understand when you hear this sound, food is coming.
So why do you necessarily need the sound that the clicker makes? Why can't you just give the animal the reward of the food immediately after the good behavior?
Because if let's use something as simple as a sit. Okay. So let's say you are wanting to tell a dog that you're teaching how to sit. That's the right thing. Putting your rear on the ground is the right thing, and I love you, and that's great, and I want you to continue doing that. So if the butt touches the ground, the dog's rear, as it touches the ground, you go, oh, what a good dog, and you give them food. Enough time has gone by the time that reward is actually being absorbed by the dog's brain, that they're not all that sure exactly what pinpoint is being rewarded. Now, certainly they are relating that reward to having their rear on the ground. But when you can put a precise communication of less than a split second, you are actually rewarding muscle movement that brief in time.
So it just makes a stronger connection in the dog's
mind. Much more precise. It's a more precise way of telling the animal the moment you wanted them to do that particular thing. That's it. That's the moment you did it.
Now, two questions there. First of all, is it important that that sound be audible to humans? Can it be a sound that only the dog can hear?
Any sound that the dog consistently hears and can notice, it's a distinct sound. Now, the problem, if the person can't hear it, is they might not know that they misoperated a tool. So if you were going to use a sound that was only audible to the dog, what if your tool wasn't working? You wouldn't know it.
I see. Is it necessary once you've got the association for the dog between the sound of the clicker and the good behavior, is it still necessary forever to reward with food after that?
It depends on the difficulty of the behavior. So if, let's assume the behavior is something fairly simple like a sit, okay? So once the dog has been taught via communication with the clicker, and you then have put a verbal cue that you want for that behavior, you have consistency in the dog's performance, meaning every single time I say sit, this dog sits now willingly, excitably, the way I want him to sit, and I'm rewarding them both verbally and with food, more than likely, maybe I can omit the food, and I can just reward them verbally. Very commonly, yes, you won't need to continue to reward with food. The step that would happen before you omit the food is that you don't need the clicker as the communication tool anymore. So the first step that would happen is the dog now understands that I'm marking their rear hitting the ground, and I'm rewarding that. I'm getting a consistent response very quickly. I can stop using the clicker as the communication tool. And as I say sit, because I have this response, I don't have to click now. I can just reward. So once that behavior is what is called fluent, meaning it's consistent, it's what the handler wants the dog to do, they're performing it consistently, then they can start looking at my reward system for that. Can I alter that? But another example of a very difficult behavior would be, here's an example, a guide dog can be taught to target a pedestrian crosswalk button for the blind handler through clicker training very quickly. Very quickly, the dog can learn via the clicker, go directly to this button so when I put my hand out, I can find that button to cross the street. If that's a really difficult crosswalk button to locate, and if you ever notice your environment when you cross streets, they're put in some really unusual places by the city. So if it's a difficult one for the dog to find, that handler may continue food reward forevermore for them finding that particular pedestrian crosswalk button.
So let me understand this. Basically, clicker training is something that you employ while teaching a dog which behaviors are good and which behaviors are not. You may have to continue to use food as a reward. You may have to continue to use the clicking, but at some point you may be able to eliminate those.
Yes. Now, clicker training is being used only for behaviors you want.
Okay.
And so it's a very positive way of training. So if you're using clicker training to get rid of bad behavior, the way you're using it is replacing that behavior with a good behavior. So in the instance of my dog jumps up, if you're using clicker training to teach your dog to not jump up, the way you're teaching it is by teaching the dog an alternative behavior to jumping up and making that behavior so strong and crave for the dog to perform. I can't wait to sit when someone comes to the door because that's so highly rewarded. So it's a way of taking negative behaviors and saying, okay, what can I train my dog to do as an alternative to that that is so highly valued by the dog? They would rather do that.
Now, I can see how this is an invaluable tool in your arsenal when training puppies and guide dogs, and, of course, the students who will be using the guide dogs as well. Would you say it's state-of-the-art for training pets, home house dogs?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Because it is such a powerful tool that once a pet owner learns how to use it effectively, they will start looking at their dog's behavior in a whole different way. For instance, all the things that they wish their pet wouldn't do, they will start looking at it in a reverse way. They'll go, oh, wow, well, why don't I train them to do this with the clicker? And it'll be such a powerful behavior, I can omit the behavior I don't want.
All right, so let's talk about an example. Say, for instance, your dog jumps up on furniture and you want to change that behavior. How would you
right.
use clicker training to accomplish that?
So for, let's say the behavior is, every time I come and sit on the couch to watch TV, my dog jumps up on the couch, and I don't want them to do that. The first thing you have to decide is I have to be consistent for the rest of the dog's life and that I'm not going to have them on the couch. Because if you did counteract that with, oh, I'm in the mood to have them up, that's not going to work.
You mean I'm not the only one who does that?
No, you're not the only one who does that.
Or by the same token, there could be one member of the family that really loves to have the dog up on the couch to watch TV when everyone else is trying to get the message across.
It's not going to be fair to the dog, right? So for this, now, what is true is you can have dogs in your household that one of them is allowed on the couch and the other isn't. I have that in my household. I have a small dog that is allowed on the couch, and I have a large dog that is not. And they live with that very effectively, but that's consistent for each dog. So if you make a decision that I really don't want my dog on the couch, gee, there's sometimes I really do want him on the couch, you need to make the decision that, you know what, I've got to get rid of my human emotion about enjoying those one moments occasionally and understand that the dog needs a consistent message that I don't want him on the couch. So once you've made that decision, okay, here's the decision, no more dog on the couch. So now how do I train it with the clicker? The way you're training it with the clicker is to have the alternative behavior of staying off the couch next to it really positive. So you could say, wow, there are a lot of ways to do that. One way could be to put their bed or something comfortable for them in a spot right up next to the couch. And what you're doing is as the dog approaches the couch, you're making it highly valued for them to go to that new place and get, whether it's a sit or a down or whatever, just when their feet touch that new spot, you would click and reward the dog for being on that spot. Once you make that place such a highly valued place to be, you'll actually have trouble getting the dog off that spot. Because as long as you've been rewarding it consistently, when they go to that spot and their feet touch that spot, they will look at that place as a very highly valued place to be.
All right, explain this to me, though. If they remain in that spot, you don't continue to reward them, yet...
Initially, yes. Initially, you would.
You continue to reward them.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that you're going to do nonstop, but initially, because the dog has got the habit of wanting to go from that spot jumping up on the couch, correct?
Correct. That's what
right,
I was...
Right, right. So what you've got to do is do enough reward in that new spot intermittently while you're just sitting watching TV. You've got to continue to let them understand this is a good place to stay. And then you start widening the gap between your rewards. And the dog still knows, if I stay here, I do get reward. So initially, depending upon the degree of the habit in the dog of getting on the couch, that is what you're look at it as a scale. Oh, on my scale on this side, oh boy, do I have a habit in the dog of getting on the couch. That means your scale on the other side of creating the new behavior is going to have as strong an influence of reward to override the habit you've got. If you have a young dog that's been jumping on the couch once or twice, it'll be a much faster process to teach the new behavior and make that a craved behavior for the dog.
But you, in fact, can teach an old dog new tricks?
You can. It just takes more. Whatever the dog, you look at it this way, from the dog's perspective, whatever it is they're getting a lot of enjoyment out of, you've got to put that much more effort in the new behavior to make it more enjoyable.
My dog sleeps on the edge of my bed at night, which is fine during this time of the year, but when we move into the rainy season, she'll be tracking mud and water, I'm assuming, onto my bed. So I'd like to make a transition and have her sleep in her bed next to my bed. However, when I'm asleep, she'll jump back up on the bed. So that's a tricky one, right?
Well, not really. It just, you can combine that with a management tool. So at the same time, you're making it real positive for her to go to her bed initially and get on it. And this is the place I'd like you to be. You can manage that by having that bed inside some sort of enclosure, whether it's a portable exercise pen or a large crate that the bed fits into. You know, so there are ways that you can, although you're starting that positive association to that bed on the floor, you initially are helping the habit maintain while you're asleep by having it where the dog can't leave the bed.
Excellent.
But when you first introduce the dog to going, you're still making it a really cool place to go to. It's like a game. It's like, okay, go to your bed. I go to the bed. I get a treat for going to my bed. And when you, after like a lot of time, days, nights of the dog staying in there, then you might find, God, I can leave the door open to the crate, and she's staying in there.
Okay, that's fabulous.
Yeah, if right. People... And then you're transitioning to, I don't need the crate anymore.
Right. Now, Michelle, if people want to learn about clicker training or begin to employ some of these techniques, can they do this on their own just by picking up a book or going to a website? Or is this something where they're really better off being professionally trained, taking a class, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, it would be up to the individual as to the way they feel they learn best, but I would advise somebody going and getting professional guidance, whether it be through video lessons, you know, in other words, a DVD you can buy, a book, or going to a clicker expert and actually taking lessons with their dog. All of those are very viable. A wonderful resource is Karen Pryor's website, clickertraining.com. And at clickertraining.com, they have an array of different avenues to go, whether it would be video lessons through or DVDs, books, or they would have resources there to locate a clicker trainer in their area.
Excellent. And I spoke with Karen recently, and she declined to come on Good Dog Right Now because she's on deadline for her next book. So she did assure me that later on she will be happy to come on the program. And we will do that. We will do a follow-up program on clicker training. But I thought it would be good to at least introduce it and also to get a sense of how clicker training is being used to train guide dogs. So, Michelle, I thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, you're so welcome, and I'm more than happy to help spread the news about how clicker training can help anybody with their dog.
Great. Thanks so much, Michelle Pouliot, who is the Director of Research and Development for all the dog, student, and puppy training programs for Guide Dogs for the Blind. Once again, to learn more about clicker training, we recommend that you visit Karen Pryor's website, which is clickertraining.com. Thanks for listening to the Good Dog Podcast. I'm Joanne Green. We invite you once again and always to submit a listener survey on our site, to write a review on iTunes so that we can rise in the standings. Finally, I'd love to hear from you, and I promise to write back. Simply send an email to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.